became of me. I'm living on the air in Cincinnati. Cincinnati WKRP.
Hey there, fans of heroes and villains of the super variety. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber, and this is my epic treasury-sized trilogy highlighting my recent adventure at the Cincinnati Comic Expo. The event took place last month. I've been taking the show on the road there the past few years, so hopefully you've had a chance to hear past episodes where I've been at the Cincinnati Comic Expo. Not only recording some fun conversations with the media guests that are there and the comic book writers and artists, but also moderating some very cool Q&As while I'm there as well. The cats behind the Cincinnati Comic Expo, Andrew Satterfield, Matt Bredesteggi, so many others on their team, they put on an incredible three-day show in the Queen City every year. In fact, I chatted with Matt back on episode 190, got a preview of this year's show, talked a little bit about the history of the Cincinnati Comic Expo, so check that out if you haven't already. Andrew, Matt, the Expo crew, all of the volunteers, so many volunteers, man, they work hard all year long setting up the event. They work even harder the 3 days of the event. Man, they're running six ways to Sunday, literally. So this year, amazing as always. My thanks to them for welcoming Comic Book Central in and allowing me to share some of the excitement from the Expo with all of you. CincinnatiComicExpo.com, bookmark that page. That's where you want to be. Follow them on social media. Plans are already underway for next year's event, 2018, so get in on that. Watch them as they prepare it. Awesome guests at the show this year. You longtime listeners know legendary actor Julian Glover. He attended the Expo this year. I mentioned that. I got to meet him in person, got to thank him for being on Comic Book Central. Yep, he was here. We had an in-depth conversation. That chat, if you haven't heard it, it's episode 191 of Comic Book Central. Great stuff with Julian there. So much fun meeting him there at the Expo. Other guests, and I'm bringing them to you all week long this week, from Gotham, Poison Ivy herself, Maggie Gyha, she was there, comic book artists Adam Hughes and Ty Templeton, the voice you hear in every Pixar film, also Cliff Clavin from Cheers, the mailman, actor John Ratzenberger, and celebrating 30 years of Spaceballs with actress Daphne Zuniga. You're going to be hearing from all of those amazing talents in this three-part look back. It's Comic Book Central at the Cincinnati Comic Expo. I'm bringing all those guests to you. All right, here's the plan. Here's how it's going to work out. I'm going to run down the schedule for you, but look, if you're hanging out often at the website comicbookcentral.net, if you've clicked on those social media links, if you've given the show a like on Facebook, if you're following on Twitter, if you've subscribed to the show on iTunes, that is key, or if you listen on Google Play, Blueberry, Stitcher, man, we're everywhere. You know then when these episodes are going to drop. If you're following it all over the place, you're going to get them immediately. So keep up with the show online. Subscribe again on iTunes. Man, you're going to get them when they drop. But here is the plan for the week. Today, you are going to hear from Maggie Gyha, Adam Hughes, and Ty Templeton. Then, I'm changing things up a little bit from what I announced last week. Monday, October 9th, bonus episode. It is my Cincinnati Comic Expo Q&A with John Ratzenberger. And then Wednesday, October 11th, a bonus episode. Man, you're getting a lot of stuff coming at you this week. I'm going to take a brief break from the expo to visit Riverdale with the lovely and talented actress who plays Hermione Lodge, Marisol Nichols. Now, Riverdale season 2, that premieres that day as well, Wednesday, October 11th. So I want to tie that in for all the Riverdale fans out there. Then Saturday, October 14th, back to the Cincinnati Comic Expo to celebrate 30 years of the classic sci-fi spoof Spaceballs with one of the stars of the film. My Q&A with Daphne Zuniga. All of that is coming at you fast and furious this week. I'm telling you what, get ready, folks. There's a lot of content coming your way. By the way, links to find out more about everyone you're going to be hearing from, check out the show notes for the individual episodes at my website, comicbookcentral.net. You're going to find everything there. You can follow them on social media as well. Again, if you haven't subscribed to Comic Book Central on iTunes, if you're not following on Facebook and Twitter, I don't know what you're waiting for. Pause this episode. Go pause. Go subscribe. Then come back because you don't want to miss anything that's coming at you. Huge week here in the lair. All right, kids, let's have some fun. I hit the floor of the Cincinnati Comic Expo, and who did I meet first? It was none other than the incredibly talented and equally stunning actress from Gotham, Maggie Gija. Now, Maggie's kind of a newbie to these shows, but she is racking up the frequent flyer miles, the travel time. Man, since she joined Gotham, she's been hitting a lot of these conventions. So everybody wants more of Gotham. It's Fox Network's take on the early years of Bruce Wayne. If you haven't seen the show, you got to watch it. Last season, the character of Ivy Pepper was played by actress Claire Foley. It was a kid version of Ivy. And then through some sinister goings on the show, some chemical reactions and some comic booky stuff, the character aged rapidly and became Maggie Gija. That was it was all of a sudden her on her way to becoming the Poison Ivy we know and fear. But the actress, nothing to fear there. She couldn't have been nicer. She is amazing. I caught up with Maggie, had a chance to ask her about her time in Gotham City. All right, I'm here with Maggie Gija at the Cincinnati Comic Expo. Welcome to Cincinnati.
Oh, thank you so much. This first time here.
Okay, well, first time for a lot of things. This whole convention scene is kind of new to you, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I'm a little bit of a newbie. Well, to the business as well.
Okay, well, yeah. What's been your experience so far? I mean, what's, like, the positives and the negatives so far?
Is
it all positive?
Of the cons?
Yeah.
I love obviously just meeting the fans and connecting with people. It's beyond flattering and humbling to know that people actually come out and drive a certain distance or fly just to see me and meet me and talk to me and get my autograph and a photo with me. It totally blows my mind. And the fans of this show are so devoted and so loyal and so sweet. They're just some of the sweetest people I ever met. So that's my favorite part.
I had a chance to talk to your fellow castmate, Benedict Samuel, a few weeks ago.
Oh, Benedict!
You're both in the world of the Batman baddies now. How does it feel to be, I guess we could say a villain, but, you know, is Ivy just misunderstood?
I think Ivy's definitely misunderstood and definitely underestimated on the show for sure. Nobody seems to take her seriously and nobody seems to be very nice to her, but I think that is part of what's developing her into the villain that we all know and love.
Well, do you think it was the intention of the producers and the writers to sort of have Ivy growing up like that, or do you think that developed along the way? Because that was a really strange development early on in the role of the character, because the poor actress, it's Claire Foley.
I know,
she's not on anymore, you took her job. But
I know, so unfair. Well, you know, the writers put it perfectly. They said she evolves like a plant. And, you know, anything goes in Gotham. You never know what's going to happen. And I think it's fun to have different actors playing different interpretations of the character. You know, I look forward to seeing somebody else play Ivy in a film someday. And I've had a really good time playing sort of like the teenaged version of her. It's transitional Ivy. And I'm looking forward to darkening her up a bit in season 4. So
I was going to say, you're hanging out with the Penguin now. So what's the deal? What can we expect moving forward for the next season? We've already got, one episode aired as we speak?
Yes.
Okay, so what can we expect for the development of your character moving forward this
season?
Well,
if you missed the premiere, you got to check it out.
I'm not caught up yet.
It was fantastic. Quite an epic beginning to season 4. I think season 4 is going to be incredible. A lot of new villains. For Ivy, I think, you know, she was sort of finding her footing in season 3 and figuring out, you know, who she can trust in Gotham, who she can't trust, and where she belongs, where she fits in, owning her power a little bit more. And in season 4, I hope that, you know, she'll mature a little bit. I think she's learned a thing or two from Penguin. He's been sort of a mentor to her in season 3. And to be honest, I think she's about had it with her the mistreatment that she's receiving from him and some of the other villains in Gotham. And I hope she comes back with a strong vengeance.
Well, have an amazing time this weekend. Enjoy meeting the fans. I hope I get a chance to talk to you a little bit more in depth on a future episode of Comic Book Central. But
awesome. I would love that.
Have a blast this weekend. Enjoy Cincinnati.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Season 4 of Gotham is underway on Fox. Catch Maggie's season 3 episodes on DVD, Blu-ray, and Netflix. They're all out there. Oh, man. Thanks to Maggie for taking some time away from all those plants to chat with me here on the show. All right, next up, I made my way over to Artist Alley to talk with two incredibly talented artists. First up, Adam Hughes. Now, if you picked up a Wonder Woman comic in the early 2000s or a Catwoman comic in the mid to late 2000s, Batgirl a little bit after that, then you are probably holding on to some of Adam's amazing work. He has become an in-demand cover artist. He has done tons of covers. He's also worked on Firefly and Star Wars comics, so you've seen his work out there everywhere. He's also worked on two of my all-time favorite characters, Superman and Indiana Jones.
All right, I'm here with Adam Hughes. Welcome to Cincinnati. Thanks for having me.
How has the weekend been treating you? What have the fans been bringing you to sign?
They've been bringing me stuff old and new, stuff I haven't seen since the 1900s, and as well as my most recent work. So it's a nice cross-section of my ancient life.
Always talking about bringing comic books to life on Comic Book Central, the Superman Returns project. How did you get involved with that? And give us a little bit of insight as to what you used for inspiration on those books.
The Superman Returns, I was contacted by DC Comics, and they said, would you be interested in doing the covers for the 4-issue prequel to the film? And I said, sure. And they said, the catch is, we're doing one a week, so you got to get these covers done really fast.
How much lead time did they give you?
It was about a month, maybe.
Okay. Like, compared to what you typically get, how tight is that?
Sometimes you get 6 months, sometimes you get, you know. I mean, I think the project came together very quickly.
Yeah.
And I remember doing those covers one a week. Superman Returns was what, 2006?
Mm-hmm.
So I did one a week in May. And
wow.
The film came out in like June,
so
I think.
So you actually cranked them out one a week?
Yes, I did one a week. Yeah.
Oh, because they're stunning. What did you use for reference?
Did they
send you a bunch of stuff?
No, they didn't, because they were like, you know, They didn't want it to look like anybody from the movie, so it was just sort of, you know, do it on your own. I mean, I remember for the Lois Lane cover, I made my own Daily Planet model. I went to a craft store.
I went to Michael's and got a
globe and I cut the letters out and I spray painted it gold because I wanted it. You know, I wanted something where I could actually catch the setting sun. So I actually took it out outside my house and photographed it in the setting sun so that the lighting would be right.
What did you think about the movie when it came out? And I full disclosure, I'm going to tell you, I loved it. So I know I may be in the minority, but I'm just curious to what you think, having worked on a project, a comic-based project.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it when it came out. I was one of the people that saw it in the 3D IMAX.
Oh, the IMAX with the two scenes. And
Yeah. And I really enjoyed it, but I don't feel that it's aged well, because a lot of times with things that are close to my heart, I don't trust my first viewing. The biggest thing for me is Star Wars, and I never, ever, ever trust my first opinion walking out of a Star Wars screening, because it's like if I love it, I don't trust that. If I hate it, I don't trust it. I got to see it again because I'm not objective. And my only thing about Superman Returns was I wish it had been a little less of a love letter to Richard Donner's 1978 Superman the movie and a little bit more of its own beast. But I, you know, I mean, here, you know, that was like before the current sort of giant, amazing age of superhero films. Superman rescuing that plane was the most amazing. I mean, we're so used to the on-screen heroics of Batman or Spider-Man, and, you know, Superman changes the course of mighty rivers and
literally Ben Steele with his bare hands in that scene.
Yes, yeah, and, yeah. It was I remember in that scene I was just on my feet. And
yeah.
I really enjoyed Brandon Routh as Superman.
Yeah.
So I was kind of hoping they would get a few more out of that particular team. You know, kind of like how The Force Awakens is like way too much a love letter to the original Star Wars. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, let's get that out of our way so we can start telling some new stories. I was really looking forward to that creative team making a few more Superman films. But, you know, it was fun working on the comic, and I was told that the director and the two writers were really happy with the covers I did, especially the Ma Kent cover.
Yeah, they're stunning. Talking a little bit of Indiana Jones, Amazing Heroes, the cover. You got the chance to draw Indiana Jones, Harrison Ford. I talked to a lot of artists that worked on Further Adventures. They always say Harrison Ford's one of the toughest to get down. What was your experience? Like, just because of his face, the proportions and everything, what was your experience?
Harrison Ford can be tough because if you don't pull off a successful either a likeness or a caricature, it can look like Chevy Chase. And I have sketchbooks full of what appear to be Chevy Chase and Chewbacca drawings. You know, it's one of those. Those two guys
That's a mashup. That'd be a cool crossover.
It's a mashup. It would be really hysterical,
yeah,
you know. You know, Han Solo rolling down the ramp of the Falcon going,
I'm Han Solo and you're not?
Yeah, exactly, you know. Leia, you ignorant slut, you know. No, that was Dan Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd.
My bad.
I got the reference. I'm old enough to get the reference. No worries.
But, you know, I enjoy drawing Harrison Ford. I did a bunch of trading cards when Indy 4 came out, and I did a lot of sketch cards, and it was just fun to draw Indy over and over and over again, because then you start to work the bugs out, and you're going, oh, okay, here's how you have to do this, and I love drawing Indiana Jones, and really, every time somebody offers me Indiana Jones work, I always say yes.
Well, that's what I want to ask. Marvel, Disney, the whole thing now, they've got Indiana Jones is in the Disney world. If they decide to re-up further adventures and do some more Indiana Jones comics, would you be on board to not only do covers, but maybe even would you be up for interior?
Oh, both, yeah. I would love to do it. I was supposed to do an Indiana Jones comic for Dark Horse back when Dark Horse Comics had the license. Indiana Jones and the Jungle Queen is what it was going to be. And I was in the middle of doing more research that Lucasfilm wanted, because I was working on it when Young Indiana Jones Chronicles was being made. And Young Indiana Jones Chronicles was sort of a historical love boat. Like every week, Indiana Jones had to meet three or four real historical figures. Yeah. So even though I was doing a adult Harrison Ford Indiana Jones, Lucasfilm wanted the story that I was doing, which took place in Africa, they wanted it to be more historically accurate to reflect the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. And I said, yeah, but this isn't like Young Indy. This is like the movies. And they said, we don't care. Like, right now, that's what Indiana Jones is, which is historically accurate. And I was like, okay, you know. And but, yeah, I was in the process of writing it. I had written it. They had approved it with minor, like, could you fix this, could you fix that? And I was, you know, getting set to start drawing it, and then Dark Horse decided to just not renew their license.
Okay, so there's an unpublished Indiana Jones tale out there written by yourself. If Marvel and Disney do this, is that something maybe we could...
I would love to. At this point, it's going on 24 years old.
Yeah.
No, it's got to be longer than that. 25 years old. To dig something like that out, which doesn't even exist as like a computer file. It's actually a typed out premise somewhere.
Wow.
I'd have to dig that out, but I'd love to dust it off. Because, you know, what I wanted to do with it, because, you know, you think, oh, Indiana Jones and a Jungle Queen, that could be really ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I thought it would be ridiculous on screen, but in a comic book, it could work. There's stuff you can get away with in a comic book that you can't get away with in a television show or a movie or something like that. And I thought that an Indiana Jones comic should be to adventure comics and adventure strips what the Indiana Jones films were to the old adventure serials. You know, it should be a tribute, not to like an Indiana. I wanted to do an Indiana Jones comic that wasn't a tribute to the Indiana Jones films or Indiana Jones comics, but actual, you know, adventure strips, like you know,
Terry and the Pirates,
yeah. and Jungle Jim, Rip Kirby,
yeah.
You know, the early Flash Gordon stuff. You know, I thought that would be a really big hoot, a lot of fun to do that and see if people got it.
Well, you got me stoked. I'm hoping we can see it. Hopefully Marvel and Disney will give you a call and cut you a check. Adam, thank you so much for joining me today on Comic Book Central.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Oh, man, Indiana Jones and the Jungle Queen? Look, if you're an Indiana Jones fan, that's music to your ears. Come on. I want that series more than anything else right now. Adam, if you're listening to this, you've got to dig through your stuff. You've got to find that story. You've got to find it. You've got to pitch it to Disney. Look, some of you listeners out there know, Keith Voss and I, we record a segment on Indiana Jones comics over at theindycast.com. We want nothing more than a return of Marvel Comics' Further Adventures of Indiana Jones. Disney owns it all now, so that could happen. Indy and the Jungle Queen, yeah, that would be a great way to bring that series back. So that'd be awesome if we see it. Even better if Adam is writing it and doing all the artwork on it. Oh, I just want it right now. Maybe he'll just like do some commissions. That'd be kind of cool. If you see him at a convention, maybe he'll do a commission on it. That'd be awesome. Big thanks to Adam for taking some time at the expo to chat about some of our favorite fictional characters. All right, you want more Batman talk? Yeah, I do. You want more Superman talk? I do. I want all that. I have just the man for you. Another incredible artist. In fact, he is an Eisner Award-winning artist and writer. He is Ty Templeton. Now, Ty worked on the comic book adaptations of Batman the Animated Series and Superman the Animated Series back in the 90s. More recently, we have been overwhelmed, to say the least, with Batman 66 merch since the 50th anniversary of the show hit last year. Two of the coolest things that came out of that, obviously getting the series on Blu-ray, but Also, the comic book version, Batman 66 from DC Comics. Ty worked on that book, so lots to chat about with him. I kick things off, though, with him talking about one of his super inspirations.
All right, I'm here with Ty Templeton as he's sketching, so don't let me bother you.
As I'm throwing out a sketch.
What did you throw out here?
It doesn't matter. Which is not
no, let's get a little bit behind the scenes here. What did you throw out? You weren't happy with?
I wasn't happy with it. It's too boring. It's too staid. It's just somebody standing there.
Oh, so it's a figure for now, but it's going to become something.
Yeah, it's a con sketch for somebody, but I just didn't like that particular layout.
You're a professional. I mean, that's your perfectionist, right?
No, I'm self-loathing.
Aren't all artists self-loathing?
So.
I think that's part of the...
I'm an artist and I have Jewish heritage, so I have self-loathing from two different directions.
You've got it coming and going, yeah. Man. You're just... How are you even here? How are you functioning at this point?
I'm a wretched thing, that's how.
What got you interested in art to begin with? Where did the interest come from, and were there inspirations, artists inspired you?
Probably my dad. I wasn't conscious of it at the time, because when you're a kid, you don't really have a sense of... your childhood being different from other people's childhoods. But my father was a cartoonist when he was a young person. And so my house is filled with comic book and cartoon art on the walls. We had political cartoons and Pogo original artwork by Walt Kelly. And if you're Canadian, you know who these guys were, but if you're not, you wouldn't. Andy Donato and McPherson and Aislinn and these guys. And... So it was just always in the house. It was never a thing that I would question. If you go over to somebody else's house, they might have a reproduction of a Modigliani painting on the wall or something. Yeah. But in our house, it was comic book art. And so growing up, it just seemed like a natural thing to do. I think I probably drew the first comic book when I was about six.
And were you like imitating a comic that you liked, or did you draw something original?
I think it was an imitation of like a Sergeant Rock comic book. It was very much I remember it was a Second World War comic book. And there was just guys with guns and helmets shooting at each other. And
that did it for you?
And I wrapped it up and sold it to my dad for a dime or something when I was like 6 years old, and he dutifully purchased it.
Nice.
And so I think I've been in the industry since I was six.
Technically, that was, yeah. That's. Did you pay taxes on that?
Well, he would have paid the taxes, right?
Well, if he's paying you, you're the contract laborer.
But it would have been sales tax. It was an issue he bought.
There might be something sketchy here. We might have to go back. You might be audited.
Okay,
for this.
Don't bring that up to the government. I don't need that.
Were there certain artists that you looked up to? Like, what comic books were you getting and going, oh, that's amazing?
I think the first artist I recognized as being special and different from everybody else was a guy named Kurt Swan. Mm. Because I loved Superman when I was little.
It's my Superman. Yeah, it's my Superman artist.
And when I would get a Superman comic, I was sort of always aware that, I don't want to be mean to him, but if it was a Wayne Boring comic, I'd go, oh, darn. And I always thought his name was perfectly appropriate because I didn't like his work. And if you got one by Al Plastino or George Papp or something, those were okay. But the Kurt Swan ones were like, oh my God, these ones are so much better than the other ones.
Yeah.
And he would, like, I would get everything. Jimmy Olsen, Lois Lane, Superman, Supergirl, everything. And anyone done by Kurt Swan, like, he had that Norman Rockwell quality to it because it was really realistic stuff. And still to this day, when people say what's my favorite job I ever had in comics, I eventually became Kurt's inker. I got to work with the guy that was my first kind of, you know, juicy, this is exciting stuff.
Yeah.
And
fanboy to peer. That had to be amazing.
And in fact, Kurt treated me like a peer. It was rather remarkable that he didn't sort of like, you know, because I'm clearly a different generation than he was.
Mm-hmm.
But when I worked with him, it was sort of like, you know, he'd say, hey, nice work on that job. He requested me for a certain project here and there. And I got to ink Kurt Swan's last issue of Action Comics and his last issue of The Legion.
Yeah.
Because I was there as he was heading towards retirement.
Yeah.
So I still have them, a ton of original Kurt Swan pages that I got to ink.
You're not getting rid of those.
No. We did Superboy together for a while. We did Action Comics. I did some Legion stuff. Mostly Legion and Action. And every day I would just wake up and go, I cannot believe. It was like joining the Beatles. It was, you could not believe that I had the job that when I was a kid,
Did that make you nervous on any level initially, even of just like, I'm inking the guy that I looked up to all these years? Did that impact your work at all, or did you just go, you know what, professional, I got to move forward?
Well, by the time I was doing it, I'd been in the business for a while. It wasn't like my first job.
Yeah.
So a part of me went, better suited to ink Kurt Swan than most people working because I knew his work better than anybody. I really understood what he was doing. Kurt is what is called a soft penciler in our business. He didn't really sharpen it up. The inker has to find some of the drawing themselves. And so when you look at different inkers inking over Kurt, they can sometimes change dramatically from one inker to another. And I won't say who followed me, but I didn't do the entire run of Superboy. I only did, I think, 6 issues of it, and I was followed by this other guy who clearly did not appreciate Kurt because he tried to overpower him. He tried to ink over it, and a part of me kept going, oh, man, I should still be there because I could be there and sort of make this stuff work. And after the other inker, Kurt said, I want you back. You got to come back for some other project.
Yeah. You kind of lose the essence of Kurt Swan at that point.
Yeah, because Kurt inks very kind of, as I said, he pencils kind of loosely. So there's a Kurt Swan drawing in there, but he would sometimes draw 3 lines for the jaw, and it was up to you to figure out which one he meant.
Yeah, and you were tuned in with him.
Oh, totally. I could draw like Kurt Swan in my sleep. After he passed away, I did a bunch of projects for DC where the specific job was to draw it like Kurt Swan.
Oh, wow.
And I did these drawings for a bunch of commercials for Federal Express with Jerry Seinfeld in them.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was because Jerry wanted Kurt Swan, and Kurt had passed away by this point,
yeah.
So they got me to do it because I was the Kurt Swan guy at DC.
What a treat. I mean, that just had to be the most amazing thing for you to just feel
as
like...
Yeah, as I said, I've worked...
What an honor.
Yeah, absolutely. I've worked... I inked over Jerry Ordway and John Byrne and all kinds of guys like that, but Kurt Swan, it was just mind-boggling that I got to do that. It literally was singing a duet with John Lennon as far as I was concerned.
Yeah. You do a lot of TV to comic book tie-in kind of things. What's the secret of a good TV to comic book tie-in? Because they're some of my favorites.
Appreciate the source material is probably the best way to do it, because too many people try to deviate from where it's coming from and sort of go, okay, I'm doing this. For instance, I don't know, if tomorrow I got hired to do Buffy or something. I'm not, but say I was. I would watch every episode of Buffy before I'd start writing it, or I would study the faces of the actors before I'd start drawing it. Because I figure if there's a tie-in to another medium, go make sure you are giving the fans of that original thing as close to a version of it as you can possibly get. So when I first started doing the animated Batman comic book, I think it's slightly surprising at the office that I tried as hard as I could to make it look like the show, because they have done that before. They did Super Friends as a comic book, and it didn't look like the animated. It didn't look like the designs from the Alex Toth designs. It just didn't look like that. And there was a X-Men cartoon that had a tie-in, and all of those jobs looked like they didn't care about the source material. And to me, I loved the show it was based on. I actually worked on the show for a while. And so I said, I'm going to do this as though this was a property being produced by Warner Brothers, not by a comic book company that's buying the license. And when I did the Adam West comic book, I had the same attitude. When I did The Simpsons, I had the same attitude. In fact, when I joined The Simpsons, they said, you don't have to draw it like the show. You can interpret it your own way. The more interesting artists we want to interpret it. And I went, my interpretation is to try to make it match the Matt Groening style.
That's the ones that are my favorites when they match up. So
yeah,
I tell you what, thank you so much for taking some time to chat today. Enjoy the weekend.
You're
enjoy
welcome.
Cincinnati, and have a blast.
I am enjoying it in Cincinnati. It's wonderful.
Kurt Swan, yeah, probably my all-time favorite Superman artist. Kurt Swan and then Neil Adams, you know, 1 and 2. Look, my first Superman comic, Kurt Swan, he was the artist on it. In fact, Power Records, I'm talking about Power Records all the time here on Comic Book Central. Did some episodes about Power Records. One of those, Superman Alien Creatures, one of the best book and record sets out there. Yep, that's Kurt Swan artwork right in there. So that the nostalgia kicks in for me right there. So I'm right there with you, Ty. The man was a true legend. Big thanks to Ty Templeton for joining me on the show. Again, thanks to all of my guests today. Ty, Adam Hughes, Maggie Gija from Gotham. Remember, if you want to know more about these folks, I'm putting links to their websites and their social media pages and all that cool stuff. That's going to be in the show notes for this episode at my website, comicbookcentral.net. All right, we're just getting warmed up here, folks. So much Cincinnati Comic Expo goodness headed your way. I got to bolt. I got to go put it all together. I still have to put all these shows together for you. So, like I said earlier, Monday coming up here, just a couple days, John Ratzenberger, my Q&A. Wednesday, a little break from the Expo, Riverdale Season 2 special. Riverdale Season 2 premieres that day. I'm going to be chatting with Marisol Nichols from the show. Saturday, right back to the Queen City to wrap things up with the Princess from Spaceballs, 30-year anniversary, Daphne Zuniga. Man, it is going to be an amazing week. Until next time, you know what to do. Subscribe to the show, follow it on social media, share the lair. Keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations, 3.0 Imported License. All the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Joining us this morning are Kurt Swan, who is the original Superman illustrator for DC Comics. Good morning, Kurt.
Good morning.
Good to have you here. And also joining us, Jerry Ordway, who is a modern-day Superman illustrator. And he's actually going to be doing some drawing for us. Kurt, how much were your drawings influenced by the drawings of Joe Shuster?
Well, there's another person that came in between Joe Shuster and myself, Wayne Boring. And I think I was influenced by Wayne Boring's drawings more than Joe Shuster's.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was an evolution there. Joe Shuster's style of drawing at that time, and most adventure strips, was rather simplified line and simple. Straightforward drawing, no shading or rendering. So I was influenced more by Wayne Boring's drawings.
I'm curious, Jerry, does the TV version of Superman and the movie version, has that an influence on how you draw them in the comic strip version today? Has that changed it somewhat?
I think so. I think we assimilate things that we see. And I grew up watching The Adventures of Superman on TV and, in reruns. And I watched the movie is what really turned me around. I had never really been a Superman devotee at that point. I saw the movie and it just ignited something in me. And from that point, I've been just...
Superman is such an enduring hero. Kurt, why do you think this is so? What is it about Superman that continues to be the focus of fascination for people through the generations?
I don't know. I think it's inherent in all of us as we grow up. We all have visions, fantasies, perhaps, of a super-type person that can do all good, and we'd like to think that we could do many good things. And it's just natural for Americans to have superheroes.